someone in the eye and say, "Tell me more. I'd like to understand." And number 8, people arrive at truth collaboratively. Last but not least, we never think alone. Every idea, every insight, every belief you hold is built with the help of others. Books, conversations, observations, community. Knowledge is a shared effort. It's more like a group project than a personal trophy. So let's build our beliefs like sandcastles, crafted with care, open to reshaping, and not so precious that we panic when the tide comes in. Because that tide, it's just new information. And if we welcome it with curiosity instead of fear, we'll keep learning, growing, and connecting. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, identify one belief or opinion you hold with absolute certainty and actively seek out information or perspectives that challenge it. Embrace the discomfort of uncertainty and observe how this openness can lead to deeper understanding and personal growth. Remember, true wisdom often begins with the acknowledgement of what we don't know. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
Stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I wound up here. All I needed.
This is Bill McKibben coming at you on KBOO Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Cheryl Beversdorf, producer and host of Aging Matters, a program produced in Arlington, Virginia, and featuring timely aging topics for older adults and their families. Today on Sprouts, we hear about ageism, which refers to a prejudice or discrimination against a particular age group, especially older people. Ageism can have a significant negative impact on physical and mental health of older adults and may lead to premature death. Today, my guest is Patricia D'Antonio, Executive Director of the National Center to Reframe Aging. She's going to discuss how ageism impacts our society and why raising awareness of an implicit bias towards older people is needed. She'll also describe what the National Center to Reframe Aging is doing to change the story about aging in America. So welcome, Trish, and thank you for joining me today.
Cheryl, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'm very excited to have this conversation with you and to represent the work of the National Center to Reframe Aging.
Well, we're eager to talk with you and learn more about the center. But before we do that, you heard me give a very tiny definition of ageism, but I'd like to hear more from you, and I'm sure our listeners would as well. So talk about, what is ageism and why is it often directed towards older adults?
You know, I think it's really important for us all to recognize, first and foremost, that ageism does happen across the life course, right? So we do experience ageism across our life course, but there is more of an impact and there is more of an emphasis as we age. And hopefully by the end of the hour, people will understand what we mean by that and how we came to this conclusion. You know, we're in the middle, right in the middle of the World Health Organization's decade of healthy aging. And so we subscribe to the definition that the World Health Organization has put out around ageism. And when we think about that, we have to recognize that ageism, that bias toward a chronological, or how many candles are on your birthday cake, chronological age, really is detrimental to us all. And it exists in several forms. It's about how we think about age, the stereotypes that we carry. It's the prejudices, how we feel about age and aging, and the discrimination, right? How we act about that. And we know that ageism exists in several different forms. One thing is it exists on multiple levels in that it could be interpersonal. I could just come out and say something like, Cheryl, you're too old to do this. You don't understand technology. We're not going to give you a job related to computers. Or you could hear someone saying something like, she's too young to run this program. She just finished college. So that's what I mean by it happens across the life course. We also know that there's what we call compassionate ageism, or where we hear people use elder speak. And I would say for your listeners, has anybody ever been addressed as dearie or honey or sweetie, or heard the statement, you're 70, you don't look a day over 50? Well, really, this is what 70 looks like, you know? And we have to understand that. It's that compassionate ageism where people think it's nice, it's actually degrading. There's also institutional or systemic ageism. This is a big one that I don't think people recognize. There may be some organizations that have mandatory retirement age. And it's simply because, again, how many birthday candles were on your birthday cake last year, right? Mandatory retirement age has nothing to do with your function and how you contribute in a job. Our colleagues at AARP have done some research and showed that people over the age of 50, 3 in 5 people have either witnessed or experienced some form of ageism in the workplace, whether they were passed over for a job, they weren't considered for a job, or like we're saying, there may be some practices where people are required to retire at a specific age. And then the last thing that I think is really important for us all to recognize is what we call self-directed ageism. And that's the ageism that we've internalized. And that's when we hear ourselves saying things like, my knee hurts, I guess that's just age. My back hurts, I guess that's just age. I can't find my keys, I guess that's just age. And, you know, if you're not feeling well, you need to get it checked out, right? It's not specifically because you're 72 years old and your knee hurts that it's solely related to age. You need to get it checked out. And people delay getting healthcare. They delay seeing a practitioner because they just attribute something to age.
And Trish, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm wondering if these attitudes that you've described in the various categories, has that always existed, or is it more now because people are living longer? And as part of that, they have their own feelings about aging. I'm wondering if there's any kind of connection with what you're talking about and what's happening now in our society in terms of the fact that we're living longer and we have to deal with all of the issues pertaining to aging.
Well, I think one thing that we should recognize here is how we came to be through the national aging organizations that the National Center represents. We have been bombarded with messages about age and these cues from a very early age, from when we're learning how to communicate, when we're 3 and 4 and 5 years old. So one thing is that there have been social mores, right? Social ways that we just accept these behaviors and we've been trained to think about them. So where's that? Where do I mean? Jokes that people tell about age that make fun of age. You know, birthday cards, right? We make fun of age. We see ageist statements in birthday cards and think nothing of it. Television shows that we're watching, and if an older person is represented, they're recognized more as somebody who may be hunched over and is crotchety, and we're making fun of that person in the TV show. And we're constantly bombarded with these messages. And what it does is it frames how we make our split second decisions about aging when we think about that, because we've been constantly bombarded and developed these deep-seated cultural models about age in our brains. And this has been for a long time. This has not been something that is completely new. What I will say is I think as we are making people more aware, as we're starting to become more aware of age, those cultural models, those negative cultural models about age are right there at the surface for us. What's really important is that we should be celebrating and we should recognize all the great innovations and interventions and inventions that have contributed to us in our society being able to age and celebrate that the greatest generation that we see growing is the 85 and older group, right? We see and recognize that people are aging to 100 much more now than we ever have in our society. And it's really important to think about that, right? When we think about different activities that influence that. So healthcare itself, innovations like vaccination, innovations like workplace rules, right? You know, that we have safety in workplace much more. All of those contribute to the fact that we are living longer and healthier lives. And that's something that we need to recognize, that as we age, we do have that momentum and we have that wisdom that we've built, and we are living longer, healthier lives.
And do you think then, Trish, that because ageism is still prevalent, even though hopefully it's changing, that on a personal level of the older adults, that they're affected by these attitudes? I'm thinking again, in particular, healthcare and taking care of an older adult as opposed to treating a younger person insofar as helping them determine what the best way to treat a particular disease and maybe even in other settings. Just was wondering if ageism personally can affect an older adult.
There are certainly systems that we are looking to impact and address. And when you talk about healthcare, it's really important and it can negatively affect people, where we know that ageism in healthcare can cause challenges where there would be under treatment for a disease simply because of someone's age. Perhaps a person is diagnosed with cancer. And rather than looking at the person from a functional perspective, saying this person is 71 years old, we're not going to treat, right? So choosing to treat or not to treat a disease, that really can have impact. So the decision to treat really should come in about a person's function, not simply their age. So it really can impact. And again, that piece where I talked about the self-directed, our own implicit bias that we carry about aging, the fact that we may even wait to seek healthcare will damage us there. So our own ideas about age and ageism really can make a difference there. So there's the personal piece where we know that can really impact someone, but there's also the systemic piece, right? So not too long ago in COVID, when we were making some really tough decisions, right? I mean, we had to make very tough decisions about resource allocation. And there were some jurisdictions around the country that were making decisions solely based on someone's age. And we heard statements like, we will not treat anybody over the age of 70 for COVID. And we actually had seen statements in the press where people made statements like, people have lived long enough. Really? I mean, that's not how we approach any kind of care or treatment, right? We look at someone's function and what's the likelihood of this benefiting someone. So there's so much more that goes into this that's really important. Now, what I will say is that raised the level of people wanting to call out ageism more and people recognizing ageism more. What I will also say is that as Americans in our culture, we have short-term memory. And now that we have shifted, I'm not sure as many people think about this as we were during COVID when we were hearing the blatant statements, the blatant ageist statements that we were hearing. So I do think that we know that this can impact and this can harm people from many perspectives, but healthcare is one.
You're listening to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Cheryl Beversdorf, producer and host of Aging Matters in Arlington, Virginia. And today we're talking about ageism, which refers to a prejudice or discrimination against a particular age group, especially older people, and how the National Center to Reframe Aging is changing the story about aging and ageism in America. An aspect of this also that it would be helpful to hear from is how many, say, vendors are out there now determining, oh, we've got this whole new cohort that's getting older and trying to figure out ways to provide services and what that means.
I think one thing that I would raise is when we talk about older adults and older people, one of the things that we recommend is to define the age group that we're talking about. Because when we make the statement older people or older adults and just leave that out there, right? So what we do is really around our communication strategies. We leave it for the listener, the reader, the person we're communicating with, to make that split second decision about what we mean. And one of the things there is we could be potentially describing a cohort of people, and there's a 50-year age group. If somebody's thinking 50 and older, right? Or if somebody's even thinking 60 or 65 and older, that's a 40-year age cohort. And certainly we would not describe anybody in that kind of a cohort and think that we're going to come up with solutions that fit, that are a one size fits all. So one of the things that we have to recognize, I think, is that we're much more different as we age, right? And so trying to group everybody 60 and older or 65 and older into one cohort is rather difficult. As vendors are thinking about this, as anybody that's communicating and working to develop resources, develop programs, think about the importance of workplace policies, really has to think about what's there and who are we trying to communicate with. And you might need to break it down a little bit more, right? So I think that's the first thing, right? The other thing, and we talked about this a little bit, is, you know, when I talked about function rather than chronological age. So yes, we are aware and we know that there are people who continue in the workplace beyond what we recognize as a traditional retirement age. What are the policies in those offices? What are the policies in those workplaces that allow for that to continue to happen? We know of attorneys who continue to work into their 80s. What we're recognizing there is the value of the wisdom, the accumulated wisdom that someone has that they can share and impart with other colleagues, as opposed to carrying those big, heavy boxes for a case, right? What's the most important thing that's valued there? There are policies that allow people to work beyond a traditional retirement age. And I think those things, we really have to think about what are those policies that we are all willing to accept and we all recognize are important for a society that has increased longevity. So we definitely need to think about those things, but we need to think about them within the context of the benefit across the life course, the intergenerational experience that's available there, and how we all are supported and recognize this could be our future as well, right? So this is something, as we develop these policies, it benefits people at a specific age. It also benefits those of us as we are coming and thinking about our future. It's our future selves that we're thinking about.
And I suspect that based on what you have been talking about in all of these different arenas that affect older adults was sort of the groundwork or the premise, so to speak, for this Reframing Aging initiative. Tell us more about that. How did that come about? What was the conversation like that made this happen?
A little over 10 years ago now, the executive directors of national aging organizations come together and have conversation on a fairly regular basis. And one thing that the conversation started to center around was we noticed that national policy to support aging services, to support older people, tended to either not pass the finish line in legislation, or the funding streams did not necessarily support what we needed to be able to really support all of us as we age. And so in that conversation, the executive director said, you know, it's one thing for us to make this statement that we believe it to be ageism, implicit ageism or explicit ageism. It's a whole nother thing for us to conduct the research and learn what it is, what we can do about it that really would affect change. So the 10 aging organizations that support the National Center to Reframe Aging are some your listeners will know about, some are working in aging in some facet. So AARP, the American Federation for Aging Research, the American Geriatric Society, the American Society on Aging, the Gerontological Society of America, where I work and who hosts the National Center to Reframe Aging, Grantmakers in Aging, Leading Age, the National Council on Aging, the National Hispanic Council on Aging, and U.S. Aging are the national organizations that formed the Leaders of Aging organizations. So these organizations may have a little bit of a different audience that they serve, but all have aging at the core of the work that they do, whether that's research, whether that's supporting practitioners, supporting AAAs, Area Agencies on Aging, supporting senior services, nursing homes, long-term care services and supports. And then there were four philanthropic funders that support us, the John A. Harford Foundation, RRF Foundation for Aging, the SCAN Foundation, and the Archstone Foundation. And with this forward-thinking support, we were able to work with the Frameworks Institute. And the Frameworks Institute, they work solely with nonprofit organizations. They are a nonprofit think tank themselves. And their mission is to advance the nonprofit sector's capacity to reframe social issues. So they've done work in early childhood development. They've done work in immunization. They've done work in homelessness. And so we talked with them and said, what is it that we need to understand about the public's thinking about aging and what it means as we age? What does it mean for older people? How can we improve our communication strategies from that standpoint? And the one thing that we learned in our research that I think is really important is that the aging organizations ourselves, our messaging was driving people toward that negative thinking about age without realizing what we were doing. And so you may have heard years ago people using terms like the silver tsunami and how we were constantly talking about the elderly, you know, the frail elderly, which we recognize frailty in age. We don't want to drive thinking to everyone over the age of 65 is frail, because as we talked about a little bit earlier, you know we become much more different as we age. And so Frameworks conducted the research. They interviewed aging experts. They interviewed members of the public. And different types of questions, different types of focus groups, interviews. And basically, this resulted in us learning how we have traps that we should avoid when we're communicating about aging and how we have strategies we should advance. And part of what we do at the National Center to Reframe Aging is help organizations learn how to adopt these strategies to advance and how to step away from these traps that really can drive that negative, or how we can drive a more productive thinking about aging. We spent time learning more about, and there's not like a phrase that pays that comes out, but we spent time learning more about how we could navigate that understanding about aging with people. And so after about 5 years of conducting the research, we were ready to move out into the field. And that's when the National Center, which was originally called the Reframing Aging Initiative, was established in 2019. The Reframing Aging Initiative was out there trying to teach aging organizations how we needed to change our communication strategies. And now in 2022, when we established the National Center to Reframe Aging, we started to work more broadly with organizations around the country to really start to think about those communication strategies that can influence policy and influence practice that supports older people, that drives a better understanding about aging and drives a more complete and equitable story about aging.
Well, and I was wondering, you're talking about frames. Is this kind of like categories mm-hmm. or certain areas that touch on the whole aspect of aging? Is this kind of the premise now of what's involved in the Reframing Aging Initiative? So you're addressing these particular areas? I'm trying to get a sense of what frames means as it pertains to aging.
What we learned in our research, and we refer to them as the traps to avoid and the strategies to advance, but they are frames that people use in talking. So since we have a limited time, I won't go into all of this, but certainly there's a couple frames that people use in communication that you may hear and you didn't realize that you heard. Once we point them out, people go, oh. So one thing is, pretty often we hear people other older people. Right? They. When we talk about older people, it's they're a group over here. They're a group over there. I'm not old. Somebody 10 years older than me is old. And it doesn't matter what age group of people you talk to. And so that kind of is a trap, because we don't recognize that we're all aging in that kind of a sentence when we talk about older people as other, and we use terms like they and them rather than we and us. Another way to think about this, and I mentioned this, but that fatalistic kind of thinking about aging, and I already referenced that we use a term like the silver tsunami to describe this incredible opportunity that we've all been able to experience with our increase in age. But to think about what happens when you see a tsunami, you run, right? So that's not really something you want to move toward. If you really think about it, you want to run away from a tsunami. Also, what we learned in our research is there's kind of this individualism that informs all of us, right, from a very young age in US culture. Individualism is very important. But we hear statements like, if you had only saved for your retirement starting when you were 23 years old, when you got out of college, you wouldn't be in this predicament right now and not have money to retire. Or if you only ate well and exercised, you wouldn't have these problems with your weight and the chronic conditions that are caused by this. And what that assumes, if you think about it, if we make a statement like, if you only exercised and ate the right foods, that assumes people had access to the right foods, right? And you and I both know that there are food deserts, and we know that there are food deserts around the country. We know that there are efforts to make sure that people have access to fresh fruits and vegetables, because that's not always available everywhere. The same with retirement. If you think about someone who is a single parent raising three children, and they're in their mid-20s and trying to think about how they're going to keep a roof over their head and make sure that their children are taken care of, I'm not sure that saving for retirement is the top on the list. And those assumptions, right, that we make, those social determinants that we all know are so important to think about, don't get included when we drive towards these traps, right? These frames that are not exactly where we need to go when we think about aging. To drive a more productive thinking about aging, we know that we have some strategies that we can advance or some frames that we could advance in our communications. One is recognizing that our environments shape our lives. So what surrounds us shapes us. So talking about all of us as we age and our collective responsibility that we have, that we're all interconnected in our communities, all of us across the life course, that's really important. And when we invoke those kinds of messages, when we talk about age, we drive toward a more productive thinking about age.
That's it for Sprouts. This week, you have been listening to the first half of an Aging Matters program about ageism, which refers to a prejudice or discrimination against a particular age group, especially older people, and how the National Center to Reframe Aging is changing the story about aging and ageism in America. The second half of the program will air next week on Sprouts. Special thanks to my guest, Patricia D'Antonio, Executive Director of the National Center to Reframe Aging. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's URSULA@pacifica.org.